You are listening to a Proper DBE podcast hosted by Georgia Abrams and brought to you by the Daughters of the British Empire. The Daughters of the British Empire is a 501c3 non-profit American Society of Women of British or Commonwealth birth or ancestry, sharing and promoting our heritage while supporting local charities and our senior living facilities across the US.
Good afternoon and welcome to episode 3 of a Proper DBE podcast. We have a packed episode today, and I'm confident that you will all learn several new facts to impress your friends and family. We're talking about afternoon tea today, not to be confused with high tea, which was a hot and hearty meal for the working class after their long shift. The name comes from the fact that it was often served at a high table or counter, whereas afternoon tea would be taken in lounge chairs or perhaps the garden. With that in mind, pour yourself a cup of tea and get comfortable. Let's hear who we have joining us today.
Katie Springer again. I'm originally from Ashington in Northumberland. I'm a member of Yorkshire Rose chapter in the Greater Houston area, and I've been a member for 30 years, and I currently serve as second VP on the national board.
This is Linda Krupp, and I'm a member in Kansas. This is where I joined the DBE and have been a member for almost 30 years. I'm a co-Midwest district organizer, and I'm also a chapter treasurer from the Lady Nancy Astor chapter in Kansas.
I'm Mary Hawks. My maternal grandparents were from Wales, North Wales. I was born in Kansas City, and I've been a member of Bard of Avon chapter for 34 years here in Kansas. And I'm currently the recording secretary in Kansas. I served on the national board back in the early 2000s, and I'm also my chapter treasurer right now.
I'd like to start things off with a quote, one I'm sure you've all heard before, that is often attributed to Eleanor Roosevelt, though there is evidence of it being an Irish proverb from the 1800s. A woman is like a teabag. You never know how strong she is until she gets in hot water. This takes me back to those World War relief efforts we discussed in episode 1 and what we can accomplish together, though we may just be a group of mothers, daughters, teachers, nurses, retirees, not for ourselves, but for the cause. It's also rather humbling to think of yourself as being among these incredible women fueled by tea and biscuits. I asked today's guests if they resonated with this quote and how they think DBE women have shown they are like teabags over the years.
I certainly think that the DBE women have shown resilience, and I'm reminded of when I was on national board, 9/11 occurred. We reached out to all the states in the DBE and said, you know, are you okay? It's particularly New York and Pennsylvania. And I remember a couple of our ladies, of our DBE ladies saying, we've lived through the Blitz. We're okay. It was really amazing to hear that from people.
It's that keep calm
strong women
carry on mentality that we
I think that keep calm and carry on carries through on this, because as you move here and you do experience culture shock and things don't go quite as you're expecting them to, as we've heard in some of our other episodes, you know, we all make these big mistakes in the language where people look at us horrified because we've said something they think is rude, and it's part of normal English language. So, you know, that keep calm and carry on goes through that. We have to just keep calm and carry on and just make amend.
It's very easy to come over here and, you know, yes, it's very different, but if you're willing, you can learn American traditions and make yourself understand why Americans think like they think, but you can also retain your own culture. So that's what I like to tell people. I'm bilingual. I'm also multicultural. I understand English culture and American culture, and I like to have both in my life. You just have to sort it out and be American when you need to be, or British when you need to be, and remember and love all of those things that you love about both places.
Yep.
Well said.
Discussing meals can get a bit complicated. In my parents' household, tea typically refers to the evening meal. Dinner, as it's known in America, though dinner in the UK often means lunch. We don't have lunch ladies, we have dinner ladies. The British can make the entire day revolve around food, from breakfast to elevenses to lunch, then afternoon tea, dinner, and ending with supper. It's a wonder we managed to get anything done. Let's find out what our guests call their meals.
At home, when I was growing up, we always had a heavy lunch and a light tea in the evening, because our main meal of the day was lunchtime.
Okay.
And we had that at school as well.
I was going to say, in my house, because of the men working shifts, you know, I told you I come from a coal mining town. And when the men worked a day shift, there was always dinner in the evening, 5 o'clock, when they came in from the pit. But I love to eat, and I was very thin as a child. And I had my dinner at school, dinner and pudding, you know, cake and custard for your dessert. And then I came home and I ate a full dinner at 5 o'clock. And then we always had our supper about 9 o'clock. You ate again before you went. And my husband, the first time he visited up there, he couldn't understand it. He says, all y'all do is eat. Anyway, now they all call it their tea, whether it's their main meal, you know, their dinner. They all say, oh, I'm going to make the tea now at 6 o'clock, and it's a full meal. I have always called it dinner. I don't know. But if you have tea in the afternoon, that's at 4 o'clock, which we do every day. And sometimes you'll make something out of that with some scones and stuff.
You also missed 11s.
Oh, yeah.
11 o'clock when we had tea.
That's when you drink your coffee. Your 11s is a coffee and a biscuit, yes.
Yep.
But high tea is supper or dinner. I mean, yes. High tea, technically, is the
working class for dinner, yeah.
Dinner at 5 or 6, yeah. In the United States, they seem to call all teas high tea.
Correct.
And it's something that we need to, we always have to correct them.
Yeah. Yes. We'll educate them yet, don't worry.
Mary is fairly well known for tea talks, so I asked her how she first got started with that and to share with us a brief history of tea's rise in popularity.
I remember it distinctly. Of course, I've always had tea because I had a Welsh grandmother and she would give us about an inch of tea and then 3 inches of milk and sugar. So from a very young age, I drank it. But when my children were young, in school, they often had units on the UK. And I started being asked to come and talk about the UK and tea and so forth. So that's kind of how I started talking about tea and researching tea. And that was really, you know, a second grader type thing. So it was very, you know, very simple. And I would serve tea to them and they all loved it. It was great. Then Judy Hollingshead, who's in, you know her because you were in her chapter. She and I and Lynn Chase, we've done tea talks before. We actually did one at the Corinth Library. 100 people came, which was just amazing. And they were supposed to bring tea items to eat. And we had this spread that was like amazing. And then everybody drank tea and ate the food. And then we taught them about tea. So I've been doing this for a long time, like probably 30 years, something like that. We know that tea plants have been around probably for tens of thousands of years from archaeological evidence. But it wasn't until like probably 2000 BC that we have a record of somebody drinking tea. And that was the Chinese emperor, and his name was Shan Nung. Supposedly, he was told to boil his water for health reasons. He boiled his water and he had a cup of water. And somehow the plant, the tea plant, was nearby and it blew into his hot water. Now, if you can believe that. And he really liked the aroma of it. And so he kind of made it a tradition to do that. You know, he was kind of the discoverer of tea. And for thousands of years, really, China was the only place that had the tea plants. And then it spread to Korea and Japan. And then we get into the European American story, which is probably what our listeners would like to know. First of all, the plant that I'm talking about is very unremarkable. It's a shrub. It's an evergreen shrub, and it's called Camellia sinensis. And it looks kind of like a bush, and it's all green, and it's very unremarkable looking, but it produces so much good stuff. All tea comes from one plant. And I'm talking about black tea, white tea, green tea, oolong tea. It just depends on when they harvest the tea. Something that always comes up is, what about chamomile tea? Those are really technically not teas. Chamomile and if you get raspberry tea or, you know, any of that, those are infusions where they put a flavor into hot water. It's not technically from the tea plant. After Japan and Korea had gotten the tea plants, the Portuguese went to China and discovered this plant existed. And the Portuguese took it back to Portugal. So Portugal actually had tea before anybody in Europe. One of the most famous Portuguese people was Catherine of Braganza, and she married Charles II, who was the king after the Reformation. Catherine was a big tea drinker. She'd been raised on tea. So when she married Charles II and came to England, she brought all of her tea, all the paraphernalia that goes with it. And that made tea popular in the British court, in the English court. Obviously, the wealthy aristocrats, the court people around her started drinking tea because she made it very fashionable. There's a famous story about the Duchess of Bedford supposedly got a little faint one afternoon because lunch had been at lunchtime and dinner wasn't until 9 o'clock. And she said, I'm a little faint and I need something to get me through the afternoon. She was supposedly the inventor of the afternoon tea because she told her servant to bring her some small sandwiches and a couple sweets and some tea. For ordinary people, tea actually started in coffee houses. So there were coffee houses everywhere in Europe. And the coffee house owners discovered this new thing, you know, called tea. And so they introduced it there. Now, when we talk about tea during the 1600s, when Catherine, you know, she was queen about 1662, she started, we're talking about probably green tea. Most of the tea that was brought from Portugal was green. There probably was a combination, but I think most people were used to drinking green tea. Black tea didn't come into popularity until later. So from about 1650 to 1750, we're thinking people drink green tea. Then black tea comes in. Now, there's some controversy about this. I read somewhere that black tea was a mistake, that somebody had left it out in the sun too long. But black tea came into Europe probably in the mid-1700s, and then it became very, very popular. And in the UK, black tea meant milk and sugar. Something that we need to understand about beverages back then is the most popular beverage at the time was gin. And gin was a horrible scourge on society. There were so many drunken people because, you know, gin was very prevalent, very cheap, and a lot of people drank it. Now, there's a great scene in Oliver, the movie, and I believe it's in the book, Oliver Twist, where the boys are complaining about their food in Fagin's workhouse, and Fagin says, "Shut up and drink your gin." Everybody laughs at that, but it's really true. I mean, children drank it, everybody drank it, and it was a real scourge on society. So I think maybe people in the government thought, boy, we really need something that takes the place of this. And luckily, tea came along about that time, and tea became so popular that it replaced ale and gin as the most popular drink. So then we get to the 1770s, where, of course, tea figured in the American Revolution. It was a huge part of the American Revolution. The Boston Tea Party was all about taxing tea. And the American settlers, a lot of them would not drink tea because they felt it was not patriotic. So tea drinking became a little bit less popular. But then after Revolution, tea became popular again. This is when England really started consuming tea. 24 million pounds of tea a year was consumed by 1800. So then something happened in 1836 that was very important. The East India Company was formed. And this was because people in the UK wanted to take the monopoly on tea away from China. China had a big monopoly on tea. So they said, let's form a company and maybe we can start our own tea company. Some of them went to China and actually smuggled the tea plants out of China. And then they realized that they couldn't grow tea in the UK. I mean, we could get into the whole colonialism part of this, where the reason England went to India was to grow tea to make money. We call black tea Indian tea sometimes because that type of tea is processed in India. A couple of other things that happened in the 1800s, early 1900s, the tea bag was actually a mistake. A man in the UK sent some tea to the United States to a customer, and he decided to put it into silk bags to keep it together. And the Americans opened the package and thought, oh, this is tea. And they took the bags and they just dipped them in the hot water. They didn't realize that it was just a storage. He invented the tea bag.
Next, I asked our guests about their personal preferences, which can sometimes lead to a heated debate, as I think it's fair to say we all make tea just the way we like it. And that isn't always the same as what the next person likes. So, what goes in the cup first, milk or tea?
Milk, tea.
I actually am tea first, but sometimes I do milk first. Mm-hmm. But you know why some people put milk in first? It comes from the fact that they used to have this very delicate porcelain. And if you put hot tea in it, it would shatter. Mm-hmm. And so cold milk would be put in to temper the hot tea. It was just a practical matter that you put the tea in first. But then when porcelain was perfected, they didn't have to do that anymore.
In working class households, the reason that you put the milk in first, growing up, there was no such thing in my life as a tea bag. It was loose tea. Everybody used loose tea. And not everybody could afford a tea strainer. So if you put the milk in first and you pour the tea leaves fell to the bottom of the cup. If you poured the tea first, and when you poured the milk in, the milk did not take the tea down to the bottom. So you had tea leaves floating on the top. So in my experience, that was the reason why. In working class houses where you had mugs, you didn't have china cups and saucers.
And I was brought up by my mother who actually, and my mother and my sister still used loose tea right up to this time. They would never have a tea bag in the house. My mother would take the cream off the top of the milk. She always had one bottle of Jersey milk delivered every day. Woe betide anybody in the house if you took the cream off the top of the milk before my mother had her first cup of tea of the day, because she had that cream in her cup. And the tea, and that was her first cup of tea every day. So, but I personally prefer to have my milk afterwards because I like strong tea and I don't like to over milk it.
Katie, you mentioned that Rington's tea is the best. Can you defend your position and explain why you would ever wrongly put anything above Yorkshire tea?
Oh, then be fighting words. Yorkshire tea's from Yorkshire. Rington's tea's from Newcastle. Let me tell you a quick little story here. Samuel Smith was born in Leeds in 1872 and founded the Rington's Tea Company in 1907 in Newcastle upon Tyne. An initial stock of tea was purchased and the business began, delivering direct to customers' homes. And that's the secret. They delivered directly. This tea is not sold in stores. That's a very important statement because Rington's door-to-door service continues today, 114 years later, delivering to over 280,000 customers throughout the UK. Rington's do not sell in mass quantities to supermarkets like other brands. From when I was a little girl in the early 1950s, the tea man delivered tea once a fortnight on a Tuesday morning. As the years went by, coffee, then biscuits, sweeties, chocolates, gifts, and accessories were available and all delivered by the tea man. Rington's teas are a very good quality and allow me to make an excellent cuppa for my family and friends. I think their 114 years of experience blending tea shows the company has got something right. Now, does that justify or not?
I suppose so.
I'd like to try it.
However, I'm going to have to start ordering it online now because I haven't been over for quite a while because of COVID. And our last visitors, when they came from Scotland, they couldn't get Rington's tea. They had to bring me a big supply of Yorkshire tea. So Yorkshire tea is second, all right?
Okay, that's fine.
Another controversial aspect of tea is why Brits insist on drinking hot tea in the sweltering temperatures. I'll get to the science of this shortly, but first let's hear what our ladies had to say when I asked them if they participate in the seemingly counterintuitive practice.
Every day.
Absolutely.
Yeah, me too.
I always do in the afternoon, not in the morning, but I always have afternoon hot tea and it cools you down. I don't know, brings your body temperature to equal to the outside.
Correct. Mm-hmm. The worst thing that Americans do is they get themselves a great big drink full of ice and they drink an ice drink when it's 105 degrees. And that's the worst thing you can do to your body. It shocks your body inside because your body, it's hot. So hot tea acts like air conditioning for your body or a hot coffee, whatever. But hot drinks are better, actually, during the summer.
Or they drink it in the desert.
Yes.
Yes, they do.
I had a friend whose husband, he lived in Australia for a few years. He's British. And before he came to America, and he worked out, you know, in the heat, working outside in construction and stuff. And they all had their billy cans with the hot tea. And if they were ever caught with a cold drink, they were fired.
Oh, wow. Those are Viking words.
Yeah. What do you like to have with your tea? Are you toast, biscuits, sandwiches, cake, crumpets? What is the perfect thing to go with your tea?
Everything. Tea goes with everything. Dinner, it doesn't matter. Everything. That's my opinion.
In the winter, crumpets are great in the afternoon. In the summer, a biscuit, hobnobs. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Hobnobs. Mm.
Chocolate hobnobs.
Yep. Chocolate hobnobs.
As I said, I looked for a scientific explanation, and I actually found a piece from NPR's Morning Edition. I will link the article in the show notes if any of you want to look at it yourselves. The general idea is given by a neuroscientist from the University of Cambridge named Peter McNaughton, who explains that there is an abundance of a particular type of receptor in the tongue that responds to heat. When these receptors are triggered by eating or drinking something hot, like a cup of tea, a signal is sent to the brain that the body needs to cool down and activates the various internal cooling mechanisms. Because these are the same receptors that also respond to spicy hot things, like chili peppers, McNaughton speculates that this could be a reason why hotter countries have traditionally hotter foods. So, this summer, why not try a nice hot curry and a pot of tea and then see how you feel? Across the years, there have been a plethora of themed teas, hosted by DBE chapters and states. Christmas teas, Founders Day teas, and teas to celebrate the Queen's birthday are all annual staples, though it's nice to play with the themes and come up with new and exciting programs to accompany the tea itself. Downton Abbey, Alice in Wonderland, Beatrix Potter, and Jane Austen have all been successful themes in the past. I asked the ladies about any they found particularly memorable.
We've had several different ones that my chapter in Somerset House do together. We've had Alice in Wonderland tea, which we had a lot of fun with, decorating the whole room.
It was really good.
And we had a quiz, and there was children. So, and then we made food along that theme. And then the one that we had shut down because of COVID was Derby Day. We were going to do hats and Derby Day for hobby horses for children. We just like to have a theme that just gives people an extra incentive to come. Mm-hmm. And Mary knows that the one of our chapters in our states always has a Shakespeare tea every year.
Oh. It's put on by the Leawood Stage Company and then the Shakespeare acting group. They always have some sort of entertainment, like a scene from Shakespeare, or they'll have actors come and talk about Shakespeare. But it's a really nice tea.
I know that Downton Abbey kind of got done to death there in the last 10 years or so. So it's nice to see other teas. I think Bess of Hardwick, the last one I went to was a Jane Austen tea that we did in Lawrence. And that was really nice.
Yeah. So. They also did a mystery tea, which was British mystery writers, which was fun.
Yes. I didn't go to that one, but I remember playing it.
And they did Doctor Who.
Oh, that's fun.
I think they did a Doctor Who tea. That was good. That was fun, too.
Are there any themes that no one has done yet that you would like to see?
Well, of course, I'm an Outlander fan, so we could do an Outlander tea. Scottish. Scottish.
Fascinating tea.
We're Beatles. Beatles tea.
Yeah, we need to get our thinking hats back on now that we can get back to doing teas. But we had our Derby Day tea planned, so I don't know if we're going to go ahead with that next year or not.
Another thing I wanted to touch on during this episode was something that highlighted how we adapted during the pandemic. I met with Linda and her co-Midwest organizer, Brenda, to discuss how Kansas still provided a tea for their community despite the effects of COVID. Some of the audio in this section is not the best quality, so please excuse that.
We didn't. Actually, it was Linda's brilliant idea. She came up with it because the fair got cancelled. And most of the chapters, that was their fall fundraiser, you know, was their booth at the fair, and then they always helped with the tea at the fair. And we knew that all of our regular customers were going to be very disappointed that there wasn't going to be a fair, but particularly because there wasn't going to be a tea. So Linda came up with that idea all by herself, I do believe.
Thank you. We had already planned to have a spring tea, and our spring tea was going to be a day at the races. It was advertised and everything. And we were going to theme it around Derby Day with hats and tables decorated with horse themes and things like that. So we had everything in motion to do not just the fair each year, but also an extra fundraiser, which, you know, we used to hope was going to make us about $2,000-$3,000 per chapter, which is quite a lot of money to be able to give out. So when everything came to a halt, we all sat around for the first 6 months saying, oh, well, it's going to end soon. We can do it in the fall. We can do it in the fall. And of course it never happened. So yes, it just came up. Why don't we do a tea in a box? We can give everybody the makings, everything that they want for a tea. We could even give them tea bags. That way they can drive up. We can all be wearing masks. We can hand the food over, and it's all non-contact. When people were making the food, they were wearing masks when they were making sandwiches. So whenever we make food, we use health precautions anyway. We wear gloves, we have clean countertops and things like that. So making the food didn't make any extra difference except that we were wearing masks. And yes, that's what we did. We came up with the similar sort of menu. We decided it needed to be things that would look good in a box, because you want people to open the box and go, oh, that's absolutely lovely. And it's a good substitute for my tea. We also had some China cups and plates that we offered as an additional purchase if they wanted. So if somebody wanted to buy a cup and plate to go with their tea, they could. And we were really very nervous about the whole thing. And the first, we put it online. We had it all set up so that people could pay through PayPal. And we were really nervous because the first week, we hardly got any orders. We thought, oh, dear. Well, it was a good idea, you know, at the time. But and then all of a sudden, we put a boost on it. And all of a sudden, it just took off because we just sent a reminder out and said, by the way, you know, if you haven't ordered your tea, it'll be you'll be out of luck next week. And the orders just absolutely took off from there. And we ended up cutting it off and saying, sorry, we can't do any more teas.
I can't bake any more sausage rolls.
60. Well, we were at 60, yeah. 61, I think it was, when we did that, because we were afraid that we were going to overload all the people that were making food.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd never done it before, so we didn't know how long it was going to take us to do the boxes and fit everything together.
The other thing was we were selling extra items. We were selling slices of Christmas, traditional Christmas cake, minced tarts, maids of honor. And those orders were really adding up also. And there was just one or two of us that were making those things. And then we had a lady email, actually it was a gentleman who emailed and he wanted, gosh, how many was it, Linda? 5 dozen maids of honors and like 6 dozen sausage rolls. And could we fill this order?
Wow.
No tea, it's just all these extra. And so then it was we want to do this? And it was we want to do it.
But that order was actually for his mother, and he was freezing them and putting them in the freezer for her.
Aww.
So that he had them throughout the year. It was maids of honor, which are like mini Bakewell tarts, mm-hmm. basically. Yeah, so we did that. But the thing that made it more valuable than just raising money, because we did raise about $2,000. We had split it between the two chapters. We had so many people who were normally going to the fair that went there and had a tea and then went shopping afterwards, who said, oh, I really will miss the fair this year. I'm so glad you did this because it keeps me in touch with what's going on. So it was as much an exercise of, you know, publicity, really. Publicity, keeping our name out there and working with the people that come to us every year and give us their patronage every year.
It kind of goes back to what you said in the first episode, you know, when, and this is different just because, you know, we're not used to dealing with things of the scale or of this nature, but you said that a disaster, you know, a disaster internationally, members will come together to raise money for that. And this is like a raising morale in your local community when it's been, what, 9 months by that point of people just being locked down and missing out on the things that they're used to be able to do. It's just, you know, it's just a little thing to look forward to. And
that's exactly it. There was a gentleman that we actually, he lived quite a distance away. And he said, well, I think it's, you know, it's too far. Brenda and I said, well, we could do with a road trip. We'll drive out and meet you halfway. Because he always took his mother to tea at the fair.
Oh, yeah.
And so he drove halfway. We gave him 2 teas and he was able to go back and have tea with his mother like he normally did. That's so
nice. Yeah.
And then we repeated it again. Just this past spring, we just did it again and we got more because we were better at it. So we had increased our sales. So it was good to raise the money too.
Do you know what the furthest distance driven to get one was?
I think it was a lady who said she had a 50-60 minute drive each way. And this was an interesting story. She had been searching for something to do for her girls because they were physically challenged. So she had not been able to take them out at all for like a year and a half. So she was constantly looking for things to entertain them and do with them when she came across on Facebook our tea, and she had emailed me and asked about, you know, any way I could get this without coming in physical contact. And we're like, well, yeah, you'll just drive into the parking lot and, you know, we will just hand you your boxes. And she said that she was going to, when I called her back, because she put her phone number in there, she said, I'm putting you on speakerphone and my sister is just grinning from ear to ear because she could hear my accent and knew it was to do with this afternoon tea that she might. And she said that they were going to have the tea in the driveway with a couple of their friends. They'd all be socially distanced with masks on. And I said, oh, so everything except the fine china. And she said, oh, no, I'm bringing that out too. So she extremely happy, and it actually made our day. So,
do you think that this might be something that you will keep as a as an option? Say this year the fair can happen, but maybe people don't want to come and spend all day at the fair. Do you think you'll still give them the option to do something like this? If
they've already decided they're not having the fair. So we have already decided we're going to have a tea. But I believe that, yes, what we will talk about is having a tea box option as well as a sit-down tea. So people who are still not comfortable in like a restaurant-type situation, then they can just drive by and pick up the tea. And sometimes people don't want to sit for an hour and a half and have a program. They might just be happy to come by and pick up the tea anyway. So I think it might be a win-win for us. We'll try a combination of both and see how it goes for the first time.
And I actually had somebody say to me when they picked up their tea in a box, you know, this would be a good thing at the fair. So often I go and you're sold out. You ought to have this tea in a box option for people who can't get in to the tea.
You know, you evolve as things happen, you change to meet the situation. But that's what the Brits have always done.
Keep calm and carry on.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Keep calm and put the kettle on, as the modern thing says, right?
That's all I have today, but the topic of tea is so expansive that we are already planning other future episodes on the topic. So if you have any stories or facts to share, or requests of things you'd like to see covered in a future episode about tea, or anything else for that matter, you can email us at podcast@dbenational.org. If you're just stumbling upon the DBE for the first time and you'd like more information about our organization or how to join, you can find us online at dbenational.org. I'd like to thank Mary, Katie, Linda, and Brenda for joining me. And until next time, not ourselves, but the cause.